beach is the effects of elevated CO2 on creeping bent grass. For many people throughout the transition zone, creeping bent grass aesthetically is the most desired grass for putting greens throughout, and we also use it for its playability throughout the transition zone. The problem with creeping bent grass is that it is a northern grass and it is not adjusted well to our summer throughout the transition zone. And we have heat stress that makes it often a roller coaster ride for superintendents while managing creeping bent grass throughout the summers. So with that, talking about the heat stress, there's two types of heat stress that we deal with creeping bent grass throughout the summer. There's direct heat stress, which would be a rapid heat stress that would occur and cause cell death with a large increase in temperature very quickly. We would not generally see that throughout the transition zone. That would be something you would see somewhere in Arizona or New Mexico. What we would see in the transition zone is indirect heat stress, and that's where we got extended periods of time where the temperature is above optimum growing conditions, also affected by high humidity in our area in Tennessee, in which we get slow death of the plant, generally greater than 30 degrees Celsius, and we are seeing negative effects to the creeping bent grass. Generally, we have 3 months that this occurs throughout Tennessee, June, July, and August. Previously, to prevent bent grass decline during these 3 months, superintendents and managers have used three prior major practices. One is reducing mowing frequency to reduce injury to the plant and allow it some recovery time. Raise mowing heights so that there is more plant actually there to photosynthesize and for storage. And recently, research actually done at the University of Tennessee is rolling versus mowing for giving the plant some rest and also allowing golfers not to be misperceived by green speeds. But I kind of took this idea from research that was done unpublished at Michigan State by my professor. He worked with Dr. Jim Flory, who was doing research with CO2 enrichment on cherry trees, and he stuck some Kentucky bluegrass in some plots that are chambers of the cherry trees and just monitor them visually and watch the Kentucky bluegrass over a couple of weeks to see which ones and which levels of CO2 were growing better. And he noticed that in the higher CO2 levels, he was getting more growth between cuttings of the creeping, or of the Kentucky bluegrass, and he had this whole idea that he had thrown out to me at one point about CO2 enrichment being a potential helper for creeping bent grass in the transition zone. So I've taken that and ran with it to see, what if the CO2 actually works and we can see some help for the superintendents in the near future. Previous CO2 research, we've seen reduction in stone model conductance at high levels. It will cause stomates to close, which affects transpiration, but it does improve the water use efficiency for the plants. We will see higher rates of photosynthesis. This is another idea behind my research. Hopefully then, with the higher rates of photosynthesis, we'll get increased TNC storage, or total non-structural carbohydrates, or essentially the energy storage reserves for the plant. There was also there's research done in trees. This is also Dr. Flory's research with Kelm here. And we saw increase in sucrose and fluorotizin, which is a moth resistance, but also a sorbitol decrease. They were working with gallium mauling nine apple leaves. More closely in grass and forage species, Lolium perennae and Trifolium repens, even though Trifolium is just clover, showed root growth with increased elevated CO2 levels. Lolium perennae also showed at 21 days with a 720 parts per million, which is a little bit close to double what atmospheric is right now, 175% greater growth. These are research that are mainly being funded by FACE, or free air carbon enrichment studies, that the government's funding, looking at whole ecosystems and forests regarding what's going to go on with elevated CO2 due to global warming. And this is on the back basis of my research as well. Unpublished data that's actually been very promising and come about in the last year or two has got some CO2 work being done down in Louisiana by a gentleman, Ricky Mayer, who received his BS from Mississippi State and also a master's now from Louisiana State. And he is doing research on his own at his golf course, Squire Creek Country Club. The first three pictures, top left here, this one and here, are his first year of his study where he only actually treated one area of a newly renovated nursery green he was using. And he is growing creeping bentgrass in Chaudron, Louisiana. He thinks he is the only one in Louisiana to be doing this. But he's put together a nursery green for research. And as you can see, those areas that are pointed to that are darker green, he put a open air system above them. You can see it here in the third picture. And he said he treated with about 900 parts per million. And right after aerification, twice, and then also throughout the summer in the third picture there. And he's seen just amazing results, according to him. I haven't been down there to see. And he has nothing published, but this year, which is shown in the fourth picture there, he has actually repped out the plots due to what he saw in 2006. And he is working with Louisiana State statistician to actually get some published data. But he is seeing CO2 actually working as a storage, TNC, an increased rooting, DCN. But this is, once again, promising for my research. For my research, I came up with several objectives. One was to determine if the elevated CO2 levels will reduce indirect heat stress, the effects of it on putting greens throughout the transition zone. And it's just a picture of my setup there. I'll describe that a little bit more in detail in a second. My second was to determine that the elevated CO2 levels aren't, in fact, increasing photosynthetic rates enough that total non-structural carbohydrates are increasing within the plant, and thus giving us an energy reserve to make it through those stressful months of the summer. And third was just to monitor turfgrass color ratings throughout the treatment, and if any disease did occur, maybe to try and put a relation to maybe CO2 was affecting that. Now here is my big portion, materials and methods. In 2006, I used a single furnace fan blower that was broke down. It's 4 2-inch PVC pipes for the treatment levels. We had ambient through like around 1,000 parts per million. We had 350, 700, and around 1,000. And they went to 9 individual chambers that were 3 reps, 3 CO2 levels. I had a needle valve that was running from the CO2 tank, liquid CO2 that was back here. Needle valve here split the CO2 into the 3 levels and then was injected into the pipes and allowed to mix for the 8-foot length, and then was then split again into 3 smaller tubes that each went to one of the Mylar chambers. And we chose Mylar. It was the material that Dr. Flory had used at Michigan State for its. It's supposed to allow the sun to go penetrate without causing any heat buildup within the Mylar, and also for its supposed non-buildup of condensation within throughout the day. And I'll get to what we found in 2006. I actually had to change, due to what we found in 2006, the system setup for 2007. 2006, we found that I didn't have an airflow even to prevent the condensation on the inside of the bubbles. So in 2007, I had to up the airflow to 7 meters per second and spread out the 3 chambers. Research locations, we had one location that we divided up the green for the 3 treatment times. We did 2006 and 2 sessions in 2007. It was a gross fifth stolen effort of Crenshaw putting green at the University of Tennessee practice facility in Knoxville. Data collection, just for monitoring, we did CO2 throughout the day. We also did a temperature monitor just to make sure the mylar was not affecting an NDVI, or normalized difference vegetative index, to give us our green index ratings. And we also did a shoot and root core poll for pre-enrichment and post-enrichment TNC analysis. Results, these are just briefly, my three levels, or my three treatment times for the CO2 level. And what I want you just to focus on is the area in red there. For 2006, we had 363, 692, and 891, 363 being our ambient levels. And in 2007, 1 and 2, you can see that we had nearly a 90 parts per million higher level of CO2 just for our ambient treatments. As I previously stated, 2006 results were non-significant due to condensation within the bubbles, and we had to change the system for 2007. 2007, first result, I left for a weekend, and welcome to Tennessee, essentially. With the high humidity dropping down and the temperatures, we ended up losing the first session of the study. We ended up getting results from the second session in 2007. Nothing turned up significant in differences for TNT levels due to time constraints. I'm going to try and go through this here. But we did shoot analysis for TNC and also for roots, and there was no significance across the board for our roots or shoots different. We also then did a sugar analysis with a phenylsulfuric assay procedure, and we did it for shoots and roots, and we saw no difference as well. The NDVI as well, no differences, and a rating of 8 on a scale from 1 to 9, that's pretty good. The green looked great all summer, but there were no differences between treated and non-treated plots. Conclusions, currently, you know, the government's working, Y-12 face research, and they're spending millions, and sometimes seeing stuff, sometimes not. So we need further investigation into specific species for CO2 enrichment. I did not find any promising research, but I still think it can be done. The Pastorolium species, the differences there, they were unmown, and they were grown in optimum conditions. I was growing mine under highly managed, intense, just like a superintendent would, greens conditions. You know, increased ambient levels. I mentioned that 90 parts per million higher was the ambient from 2007 back to 2006. That could have had an effect. I do not know what. Ricky Mayer at Squire Creek is another thing that's showing promise, and potentially just biological variability affected mine. So what's next? Hopefully you can talk to me afterwards. But future open air systems, where we just do open air enrichment across the green, separate microsystems, maybe with the treatments further apart so that there's no contamination amongst treatments, possibly doing something like a mowing versus rolling, only a mowing versus CO2 enrichment, regime changes, and possibly something different with my sampling techniques. That may have been something that had caused the problems when I talked to Dr. Wayne Mosher at Michigan State, who I did my TNC analysis with. There was potential there for some sampling error. My acknowledgments.